This week on Out on the Air, our whole show features an entertainment power couple, Larissa Julianas, a live event performer, actor, published scriptwriter, artist, and CJ Julianas, producer, director of live theater and movies, discussing their indie film, The Misadventures of Mistress Maneater. Our spotlight's on the 4th annual NWI Superstar Singing Competition that supports the Wounded Warrior Project.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight. He's got a program going on that's called the NWI Superstar, and it's going to be September 27th, but it's an ongoing contribution. You can also, if you're interested, by August 30th, you can be a sponsor of this program. Robert Head, who is the executive director of the NWI Superstar, starting their fourth season. Welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Hello, welcome.
Well, we want you to tell a little bit about your background and how it led to you establishing NWI Superstar.
Great. Well, I'm a veteran. I served in the Navy from 2004 until 2012. And I moved to the Northwest Indiana area a few years back, got together with a few people, one of them, George Atkins, Robin Bender out of Portage, and Ray out of Hobart. And we came together and put this karaoke competition together, kind of willy-nilly. Mm-hmm. But it was put together because during the pandemic, a lot of venues didn't have a lot of people getting together. A lot of people weren't able to sing karaoke. As you know, before the pandemic, everybody was getting together, doing things. But right around the time of the pandemic, things just kind of came to a shutdown. And we found that it hurt a lot of veterans, too, because there wasn't any interaction. So after the pandemic started clearing up a little bit, we started to get together, wanted a way for the community to get involved, wanted music to be kind of the centerfold of it, and then wanted a way to give back to the veteran community. So that's how we got started.
Well, thank you for your service, first of all.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
So, Robert, do you choose different charities that support veterans each year? Is there a different charity, or is it the Wounded Warriors every time?
Yeah, so we worked with the VFW here in Lake Station. We worked with the Wounded Warriors program. We're looking for other veteran organizations that need the help, especially like in Gary, where there's a veteran village where veterans can go if they're homeless. But it's mostly for veterans at this point. We have another division of NWI Superstar, which is for the minis, and that focuses more towards like childcare, things like the Boys and Girls Club, things like that. But we did do a Boys and Girls Club last year since they were one of our partners and our sponsors. But we are kind of deviating from that at this point and just focusing on veteran organizations in the community for the adults and then like Boys and Girls Club for the minis.
So you're now in your fourth season. Tell us a little bit about what the actual competition is, about the Superstar competition, eligibility and things like that, who's participating and how it works.
Yeah, so people from all over Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana region audition. They audition from around May time frame until the end of July. And then they audition for about 2-3 weeks. Then the show actually is a seven-week process. So we go from 50 contestants down to 25. And then those 25 contestants compete for 6 weeks until the grand finale, which is actually coming up September 27th. And then the top winner's chosen, second place is chosen, and then they're all divided into little teams. So even the first place team wins too. And then they get to kind of showcase themselves at every summer. So if you look at the calendar around July 27th and 28th, we usually have a concert that's held in Lake Station, Riverview Park. And they get to showcase their talents on a stage with a live band. It's really pretty awesome.
And what prizes do you have for the winners?
Well, everybody gets a prize, which is really great. So if you're an audience member, you get door prizes. So you get a ticket when you come in. They give out TVs and like cell phone cases. Different vendors and different sponsors out in the community give out like free meals. So you're getting to participate that way. And then if you're an actual contestant, you're getting your first place grand prize, which is $5,000. Second place, which is $1,000. And then a team prize, which is $500.
And who does the judging?
Yeah, so local either artists or local instructors who do vocal coaching or teaching at local schools, they usually do the coaching and the judging. In addition to that, every audience member gets a vote while they're at the facility. So every week they vote for the person they really want to stay on board, that they really thought was like really inspirational. And so those votes also get taken into account. So it's very much community engagement, community involvement, not just like, hey, we're in front of a panel and then we get to meet these people.
Doing this like once a year, it sounds like, and you talk about the minis, but everything, is that something that you might expand to maybe like a twice a year type thing?
No, we're pretty much set with the 1 year thing. It's a big production. So until you know things kind of change, we definitely want to stay 1 year at a time.
What are the criteria that your judges use for your various contestants?
Yeah, so they check vocal ability, make sure that the contestant can actually sing, what kind of songs they choose, stage presence, how they interact with the audience. You know, we originally started out with just like karaoke, but it's kind of shifted into a singing competition where they're actually performing using sounds, going off stage, meeting the audience member, those kind of things.
Well, we're almost about in our last minute here, so I want you to have a chance to tell people how they can find it online, show dates again, cost, if there is any, you know, all those types of details.
Yeah, so you can find us online at nwisuperstar.com, or you can check out any of our social links at nwisuperstar, whether it's on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Tickets are running anywhere from $10 all the way down to zero if you're a veteran, things like that. You can find us on Eventbrite as well, looking up at NWI Superstar. And we're running from August 16th all the way through September 27th.
And September 27th is like your grand finale then, correct?
That is correct, yep.
Very good. Well, we appreciate you coming on our air. That's Robert Hidd, the executive director of NWI Superstar. And on September 27th, Geno's in Hobart is where the final performance will be. And if you're in before August 30th, you can also be a sponsor of this wonderful project. Robert, thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air and NWI Superstar.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Robert.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Larissa and CJ Julianis to Art on the Air. Larissa is a live event artist and performer, published scriptwriter, video editor, and SAG-AFTRA actor and writer. Her historical plays have been produced internationally. She is also a performance capture artist in Warner Brother Game franchises. CJ is a longtime director and producer of live theater throughout the Chicago area. He has produced or directed over 30 productions for stage and has worked as a set designer, builder, casting director, acting coach, sound and light designer, dramaturge, and actor. Both Larissa and CJ have extensive improv comedy talents. With all that experience, CJ and his wife and muse, Larissa, established Binary Star Pictures in 2018. Their first effort is the romantic action comedy, The Misadventures of Mistress Maneater. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Larissa and CJ. It's really nice to meet you.
Great to be here.
Thank you so much.
Well, we love having you on board here. And of course, I met you sometime seeing your exhibit of your, the other thing you do as an artist, Larissa. And we, of course, both have viewed your film that was actually shot in Valparaiso. But, you know, our whole show is about finding about our guests, like in detail, their background story. I call it their origin story. So tell us, Larissa, first, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Have fun with that.
Well, we definitely, tell me to wrap it up if I need to wrap it up. I tend to go a little long. Well, I come from south side of Chicago, you know, the good Polish stock. I think I read somewhere once that about 10% of the residents of Chicago can claim Polish origin. And that's the side of my family that raised me, you know, blue collar folks who wanted a little better life for themselves. And my grandma was the matriarch of the family, and she was the one who instilled a love of culture in all three of her daughters. And I was her only grandchild. Only child, only grandchild. That was an interesting childhood growing up. But my parents were both musicians. They met in band. So the love of music, the love of musicals, the love of movies and art, even though none of us had much money at all, it was always, you know, fighting to get by, cutting coupons, growing our own food. There was always that appreciation instilled in me and those huge dreams that I had that, you know, someday I could have a bigger and better life and maybe even make those, you know, be in the arts. So from a very young age, I enjoyed performing. We were very much involved in the churches we were part of. My mother played the piano. So I was singing at an early age. I was writing plays. We lived in the middle of the country. You know, they were city folk who wanted to live out, you know, away from all of the city. And so we unincorporated land on a well in the middle of nowhere. Of course, now it's all built up, you know, 30 odd years later. But I was homeschooled. So that definitely gets you pretty isolated. So I was always a bit of the overachiever, I think, to make up for the fact that I didn't necessarily fit in socially or with kids my age. I always got along with and mostly respected folks of my parents' age. And you'll find that a lot with only children. You know, I was raised to have different standards and a different life. And because of that, I had to create my own dream world and my own escape. And that was always in my scripts and in my stories of what could be, you know, trying to write musicals with, you know, writing lyrics set to classical music at a very early age, because it's like, well, it's in the public domain. Yeah. Always trying to experiment with new things and fight to get it out there for whatever adult would actually be willing to read my material. I had my.
Did you have a support system in like, did elementary school and middle school and high school, did they see your writing talent or your imagination? And was that promoted?
There was no they, because I was in a correspondence school. Yeah, fortunately, I had a very supportive mother. But so much of it was, I believe, to finally get the love and respect that I wanted so much for my stepfather. And he was a very troubled person who struggled with alcoholism. So you'll find that a lot with people who have been raised by alcoholics, that so often they become perfectionists and overachievers in that quest to be worthy of or good enough for the love that they were never always promised. I think that I've been able to heal that side of myself. I've been able to, bond with others over that kind of childhood. But it also made me who I am. So I think that every dark cloud is a silver lining. And so from an early age, I sold my first script to a publisher when I was about 11 or 12. I always loved the ancient world and those big old sword and sandal epics from the 1950s and the golden era of Hollywood and the musicals from that time. So those were a big influence on me as a creator and a writer. And more than anything, the movies, I'd say, of folks like Steven Spielberg and Robert Zemeckis, because those were the blockbusters when I was growing up. So to me, that's what movies were. And that's still part of my writing. I got into Columbia College, Chicago, a very young age, and I ended up being their youngest graduate of record at age 17 with an interdisciplinary degree between the film and the theater departments. I wanted to be a screenwriter, but I had always enjoyed performance. So even though my family knew that being the actor, being the singer was going to be a very hard route. And I was not always encouraged when it came to treading the boards, but I was always supported, even though they knew, okay, you're going to have a better way of making a living. So when I stepped out into the world, I had a very lofty opinion of my own abilities. At this point, my work had been published by an imprint of Samuel French, Inc., which is the largest, one of the largest publishers in the world. They're out of New York. And I had my play actually premiered at a school outside Russia. Outside Moscow in Russia. I didn't even know about it until I found the photos online of all these kids dressed in togas.
Oh, wow.
I wish I had that. But then I premiered the show myself as a director out in the south suburbs. But, you know, I just thought I was something else. And I was so special, only to realize the world didn't really care that much. And I got a lot of crickets. So, you know, from working minimum wage, cleaning toilets at a gym, I slowly worked my way up and have done a lot of different things in the performing arts and the visual arts over the years, always pivoting because it is very difficult to and challenging to make a living in these art forms. And I've been able to have some incredible experiences, and I'm very honored about, and they sound very flashy on a resume, but ultimately it's about, okay, I need to pay the bills, pivot, what else can I do? Pivot, what other opportunities are here? And I've been very fortunate that while I didn't necessarily have those elementary and grade school and high school teachers growing up to encourage me and teach me, over the years, I've had so many people support me and protect me in ways that I didn't even realize until after the fact. And I'm very grateful to those people who just decided, you know what? This young lady is working hard and she knows what she wants. And I'm going to do what I can to help make her dream a reality.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's quite amazing how each step leads to the next step. So all those pivots led you to the next thing. So
it's very true. And I think it's ironic, too, as I'm coming to discover how even what you view as something toxic or bad at the time, you know, some certain people you meet turn out to not be who you think they are, but they end up introducing you to wonderful people who change your life for the better. So I have to take every step on faith, even when it seems like it might be a step backward at the time.
Yeah, it's all enriching in some sort of way.
Well, I want to move on to CJ for his origin story, but I want to then save the meeting story after he tells us a little about his journey, story. And then we can even talk about how you guys came together. But go ahead and tell us about yourself, CJ.
All right. So my name is CJ Julianis, and I actually started in the artistic realm as a young person. My dad had a advertising and photography studio in Chicago. And back in the day, his biggest account was with Playboy magazine and We magazine. So I was exposed to all of that kind of stuff when I was young, and I wanted to get into the art business and all that kind of stuff. So I really pursued that very hard as a young person, but I also got into theater. My mom and dad at their church, they would do a yearly musical every single year as a fundraiser for the church. And if they needed a juvenile delinquent, well, I got typecast. So that was me. And then I stopped doing it. I joined the military. I wound up in some pretty interesting military units. I was part of a mobile diving and surveillance team. I was part of a salvage team. And then I wound up on SEAL Team 4 and SEAL Team 8 as a hospital corpsman and a technician. And so I wasn't an operator, but I worked with them and I was on the teams for over 6 years. And then when I got out, my whole life fell apart. Got divorced from my first wife, moved back to Chicago. I was living in Coconut Grove, Miami. And the one thing that I knew is that I needed to get myself back into a social network. And the one thing I also knew was that if you plug yourself into the theater scene, it's literally an instant social network. So I started doing that, and I did that mostly on the North Shore of Chicago and in Chicago. And then that started to kind of like organically lead to me having my own theater company. And I was the artistic director and president of Theater on the Hill out in Bolingbrook, for 10 years. And that's where I met Larissa. Larissa was in my cast for Joseph, and she was cast as the narrator. And that's where we first met. And there's a whole saga that goes along with that. But as a byproduct of me leading this theater company, and basically I did everything from soup to nuts when it came to the theater company. But as a byproduct of that, I started directing corporate videos, industrial movies, movie shorts. And then we finally, Larissa and I, we partnered up and we decided, hey, we are not getting the opportunities that Larissa deserves. So, you know, we're going to make our own luck. And we decided at that point that we were going to self-fund and produce Larissa's feature film, The Misadventures of Mistress Maneater, and it turned out terrifically well. And we're getting fan mail from around the world, which we're really thrilled about. And here we are. All these years later, Larissa and I have been, we met during Joseph. We've been married for 18 years. We've been together for 19 years. And we just continue to create art and opportunities and all kinds of things where we're trying to just leave a trail of beauty and goodness behind us every day, which is these days of the most importance, where you're just trying to make the world a better place. So that's kind of where we're at.
Tell us the Joseph story about meeting, because I kind of know from a little bird telling me that it wasn't like you hit it off right away. Whoever wants to pick that up.
I think I'm going to let Larissa kick this one off, and then she can kick the ball back to me. What do you think? I can do that.
So it's about 2 years after I graduated college, and auditions were not necessarily going very successfully for me in the TV and film and theater realms. I happened to, on a whim, that day, check the paper, back when we all used to still get newspapers. Feels like a bygone era. And I saw that there were auditions at a local company I had never worked with or was familiar with for Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Well, I had just learned the part of the narrator to audition for another theater company where I didn't get cast. So I thought, what the heck? I've already learned this. Might as well go out. And as I cut out the piece of newsprint and I taped it to my computer monitor, the thought flashed before my mind, I wonder if this will change my life. Nah. I ended up going out, and at the actual auditions, I saw CJ for the first time and didn't make much of an impression. I was just like, yeah, some guy. Ended up getting cast as the narrator. And at the very first cast meeting, he was giving the big speech to everybody, like 50 people, including lots of kids, lots of first timers. Yeah, he was giving them the big speech about expectations. And he did very sternly with his leather jacket on and his black beret turned backwards and his club glasses on. And I took an immediate dislike to him.
Wait a minute. Dislike? Is that the right word?
Loathing?
Loathing. Loathing. Let's go with loathing.
I proceeded to glare at him.
We call it the wet cat look now.
Yes, because when you bathe a cat, if any of you have pet cats and have needed to give them a bath, they will give you the same look.
Stink eye.
Yes. I wanted nothing to do with him. I avoided talking to him. But at a certain point, I was forced to talk to him because I was staging a production of my own play at the time, which was a World War I drama. And I didn't have the press contacts for getting to the newspapers to say, hey, auditions for actors at this time and this date. So I ended up being forced to talk to CJ.
Because I handled that stuff for my company.
And I realized, okay, well, maybe he's not as bad as I thought. And slowly, slowly over the following weeks, we started talking more throughout the production of Joseph. And the chemistry was very interesting, especially when I had callbacks for my production. It was called Lights Over Europe. And, you know, I was uncertain about a couple of leading men, potential actors. And because my stage manager wanted one gentleman, and I was looking at somebody else, and this somebody else CJ had worked with. So I said, CJ, do you want to come to my callbacks? I need your input, because you've worked with this performer, and, you know, you're a director and a producer. So he agreed to come, first of all. And second of all, he showed up. I've learned that in the arts world and in the performing world, you run into, you know, a lot of charming, wonderful, engaging people.
Yeah, I'll come see your play.
But do they show up? So he got a lot of points just by showing up. And I did not know what to expect from him. I warned my stage manager. I was like, you know, this CJ, he might be really full of himself and dictatorial and tell us, you know, this person needs to be here and that person needs to be there. Because CJ is such a strong, confident personality. I was actually
expecting. He's a director.
Yes, yes. So I did not know what to expect. So the auditions commence. I'm in the middle behind the table, the auditor table. I keep, you know, whispering to my stage manager on one side, and I notice that CJ isn't saying a lot. He's just making quiet notes, very pensively, not saying much of anything. And finally, I turned to him and I said, "Well, what do you think?" And he looked at me and he said, "I think you know what you want." And he started opening up and giving me some insights, whispering in my ear a little closer than he needed to, I noticed. But that was the first day that we had some truly amazing chemistry.
We had chemistry. It was like I don't know if anybody's ever seen like the opening of the Terminator movies where the Terminator comes in the orb and there's like lightning and shooting off, and that was between us. We had the lightning bolts, and
You, CJ, was that from the beginning with you, CJ?
No, just at that audition. We had
just at that audition for you,
yeah,
as well.
We had the chemistry there. Prior to that, it was just like Larissa is obviously a very attractive woman, and when I first met her, my reaction was, "Oh, that's a very attractive younger woman." Younger being the operative word, because we're not exactly the same age. So I didn't give much thought to it. You know, I mean, when you're the president or artistic director of a theater company, you meet a lot of people. And you get pulled in a lot of directions. So I just was like, okay, you know, okay, cool. And then I had no idea that she hated me as much as she did until I realized that when she looked at me and started looking like she was smelling a skunk, then I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. And then if I would walk into the room, she would literally walk to the opposite side of the room to be as far away from me as possible. So I was like, oh, okay, we got a live one here. All right.
And at the
how this goes.
At the time, he also had a bad boy reputation, a bit like a Sky Masterson in Guys and Dolls, for those of you with your musical theater references.
Let's just say that I was pretty good at being a bachelor. But I met Larissa, and I'd been divorced for 14 years, and I really never really thought that there could be a woman who came into my life that would be the one. And then I met Larissa, and I was like, well, I guess there goes that theory. So once Larissa and I really started with talking about literally everything, I mean, Larissa's the kind of person, if she doesn't talk, she will explode. So
it is true.
We definitely need to maintain the conversation going so we don't have a Jackson Pollock on our ceiling when our head explodes. But we've just had an ongoing monologue between the two of us, or dialogue between the two of us, since we've met. And it's about everything. It's and from esoteric to, you know, the basest humor and anywhere in between. That's kind of how we roll. And it's been a wonderful glue in our relationship to have somebody as artistic as I am, as creative as I am, involved in my life on the daily, who's my best friend, and we can talk about anything. So that's where we go when it comes to any of our creative endeavors. We talk about how we're going to do stuff, what we're going to pursue, what we're going to do once we get there, all that kind of stuff. It's just a wonderfully symbiotic relationship where we have just this amazing relationship as adults, but we also have a symbiotic relationship as artistic people.
You're listening to Art on the Air with our guests today, Larissa Julianis and CJ Julianis, on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
So that's your meet cute.
It was a meet ugly, but you know,
But I think that's why, you know, I love to write romantic stories, but my favorite trope is always enemies to lovers.
And to be clear, I was not Larissa's enemy when we started. I just literally didn't even think much of her because I had other things going, you know. And
well, and she was giving you the stink eye, so.
Oh, it was more than that. But once we started talking, there was a chemistry that was undeniable on multiple levels, and it just had to be investigated. And what's interesting for me as a very, very successful bachelor is that once I started seeing Larissa, everything else just kind of melted away. And before I knew it, I was only seeing Larissa and we were just friends. But I still didn't want to see anybody else because there was just so much beautiful stuff going on between us.
Larissa, with your script, the script that you both produced, when did that start? When did you begin that script? Because
which
it's
script?
Mistress Maneater.
Mistress Maneater, yeah.
Oh, that is a long story, Esther. So
good. We love long stories.
2014 was when I wrote the initial draft, and it was supposed to be, you know, very fun and light, small town romantic comedy.
It was just a lark.
It was fluffy.
Yeah.
Didn't have, you know, a ton of substance or depth, but I was always taught in screenwriting, you raise the stakes. You meaning you give your characters a lot to lose if they get what they want, if they don't get what they want. So that's always fun to do with a romance. And that's why I have these two characters of a dominatrix who does not want to be a dominatrix. She is an art historian. So, but she is kind of like the, you know, the fallen woman, as it were, and the Episcopal priests from Serbia. You know, two people that want nothing to do with each other and seemingly have absolutely nothing in common. But your stakes are really high. For her, she is dealing with a blackmail, you know, blackmailing Russian mobster X. So, and or there's blackmail involved. There's a loan she owes. Basically, she's going to die. Unless she, you know, charms the priest. And the priest, of course, could lose everything if he ends up with, you know, this perceived fallen woman in a relationship. So I really wanted to explore that idea of all these people. If it doesn't work, there's a lot to lose. If it does work, they have a lot to lose. How do their individual arcs as characters and as people have to take them on a journey to where they can be together? That's what we always watch for, right? If it's too easy of a journey, there's no suspense. There's no reason to keep listening or watching. It has to be against all odds that these two people can be together. So the following years, I turned it into a novel manuscript at the suggestion of a film director colleague that I had worked with on one of his feature films. He's actually a local resident of Northwest Indiana as well. He suggested I write it as a book series. So I wrote this novel, took it around a few places, but it was just too out there and not easily packaged for a lot of agents and publishers in the romance industry. There was a lot of elements there that weren't necessarily your traditional romance. I wanted something with a little bit more edge going on, a little bit more substance in other
ways. Not so cookie cutter.
Yes, not so cookie cutter. But fortunately, being able to take all the notes that I received on the initial screenplay allowed me to deepen the relationships and take it much farther and much deeper in a novel format. So a few years after that, I brought it back then to screenplay format. So this was many, many drafts over about 5 different years until we had the finished script that we ended up filming in the Chicago suburbs and Northwest Indiana, Valparaiso and Crown Point.
Yeah, so Can I segue into this? Do you mind?
Yes, please.
Okay. So when Larissa wrote the final iteration of her script and I read it, I've directed a lot of things in my life. And I know Larry has. You probably have too as well, Esther. Sometimes as a director, you just see it. Sometimes you read a script and you don't see the flow. You don't see the way it's going to look. Other times you read something and it just speaks to you. You can just see it. And you visualize it right in your head, just exactly how these scenes were going to go. So I read the final script, and I was just like, Larissa, this is terrific. You did a wonderful job on this. And I immediately, in my head, I didn't mention it to Larissa, how am I going to go about making Larissa's dreams of having her script produced into a movie? So at the time, I was working as an assistant director on a webisode series, a web TV series. And I had driven out to Illinois to film a bunch of episodes for this thing. And I met our director of photography who was working on the project. And I realized at that time, you know what? I can work with this guy. Oftentimes when you're doing productions, one of the most important things is discovering who you don't want to work with, because they will ruin it for you. You really want to make sure that you get the right people in there and the people that you can work with long term. So I met this guy and I just knew instinctively that we could work together. So also at the very same time, Larissa and I had flipped a house and I had a fairly serious influx of cash. And on my drive home from Illinois after doing this webisode series, I just got in my head, we're going to take that money and we're going to make this movie. Not only are we going to make this movie, we're going to make it at a very high level, utilizing both of our skills. And we're going to do it for the money that we've got. And we're going to open doors for Larissa for her career. And we're going to show the world what we can do on a small budget. And that's basically where it all started off. I came home and I said to Larissa, we're making your movie. And Larissa, what was your reaction? What did you say to that?
She kind
of vapor locked. The words weren't coming out, but I was like, no, we're making this movie and we're going to take the money we made on flipping this house. And instead of investing it or in our future or for retirement, whatever, we're going to invest in ourselves. And we're going to do this. Your dreams are going to come true. We're going to get you on film. Your film is going to be on the big screen. And with any luck, people in this business are going to see all of the things that you bring to the table and what you do really, really well. And hopefully one day it opens doors for you. So we wound up spending about nine months in pre-production, which is all of the stuff that you have to do ahead of contracts and locations and getting stuff prepared for your shooting. Then we shot for over a month. And then we had about another 9 months of post-production where we edited the whole thing together before our premiere, which happened 1 week before the shutdown of COVID. So basically the timing for everything was just really, really bad for us. But at the same time, we have a film out now. It's streaming out on Amazon Prime. It's on Tubi. It's on Apple TV. It's on all the major streaming channels. And we're getting fan mail from around the world. And we love that. We love the fact that Larissa's story and the movie itself, for the people who find it and watch it, it's really resonating with them, not just on a level that's fun and comedic and is going to make you bust out a bunch of laughs, but also Larissa inserted into her script a lot of metaphors, things like female empowerment and toxic masculinity and self-actualization and religious history and gay rights. The list goes on and on. So we know a lot of moviegoers, they like to look at a movie and they like to look for deeper meanings, which is great. So you can enjoy the film as a flat out straight comedy, or you can enjoy it as that, but look for the deeper meanings, which is something that makes Larissa and I tick, because we always watch movies together. We're movie buffs. And we always wish there was more depth to these stories. We wish that there was more that would be inspiring to people when they watch it, to be, you know, to look at things differently or be a better person or whatever. And we feel we accomplished that with this film. And I just feel like Larissa's script was the best thing that she'd ever written to that point. And it needed to be made. So
in thinking about that, because when I watched the movie. When I watched the movie, I noticed there was a scene, and I don't know whether this was an accident or whether I'm reading too much into it, but when Larissa is in that elevator, just sitting down on the floor, sort of exasperated, the way you frame that shot, those bars on the elevator look like halos. And I thought, is this a reference to like the devil into the angel, or the angel in the devil? You know, like, I don't know. There was just this one scene that just looked like halos above her head as she was sitting on the floor.
We've got those kind of shots throughout the film. Our director of photography was very big on using light flares for effects. And so used them there. And then there's a scene in the church after Larissa's character cleans all of the stained glass. There's a scene where he's just admiring all of that. And we used light flares to make it look ethereal and otherworldly. And so, yeah, you're going to find that kind of stuff all through it. There were happy accidents in our film. That wasn't one of them. We planned that stuff. So
I actually felt it was more at times crossed into what I call a dramedy. There was a lot more drama in it than just a pure comedy. It's not a pure comedy at all. It's a romantic. Yeah, romantic in some ways, but it merely crosses. And of course, you're bringing some of the elements in. I'm curious where you found the people to be in your cast. I mean, is this from previous contacts, or did you have auditions, or how did that process work?
So it was a process, and Larissa and I are very big on using people that we've worked with in the past that we know can do the job and that we enjoy being around. Because it's the same thing with movies as it is in theater. You're going to be around these people for months and months and months, and you've got to like them, and you've got to be confident that they can do the work. So there were several people that we brought into the film that we had cast in our theater productions in the past. And we enjoyed them. We were friends with them on a personal level, but we also knew that on a professional level, they could bring the goods. Then one of our biggest challenges was finding the character who played Father Radovan, the Serbian priest who also had this mixed martial arts background. And so we were told initially, you will never, ever find an actor to play that very difficult role in Chicago. You're going to have to go to New York. You're going to have to go to L.A. So we put out. Yeah, we did. We went to New York and L.A. and we put out a very wide net to have actors come in and audition. And what's interesting was we really didn't get a lot of name male actors, but we got a lot of name female actors.
For
the role of his mother, which is really interesting. But ultimately, what we decided to do is we held an audition at the SAG office down in Chicago on Erie Street, and we had some actors come in who had responded who were local, and that's where we found Mickey O'Sullivan. And Mickey at the time was doing The Chi, which is an HBO show, and then he had a recurring role in Chicago PD, right? Mm-hmm. So we were kind of faced with kind of an interesting decision. We could get somebody who was trained as a fighter, and hopefully we could get them to act well, or we could get a really good actor and teach them the basic fight moves that we needed to do. And we wound up deciding that the best route was to get a real actor, because ultimately, it was about the way he presented the character. So Mickey's a terrific actor, did a wonderful job for us. And we wound up having a couple of fight choreography rehearsals with our fight choreographer. And what's really great about that is that our fight choreographer was actually his opponent in the ring. So if anything needed to be changed or changed up on the fly or fixed, the fight choreographer was part of the movie. So we found Mickey through those auditions, a lot of people we knew previously, and then we brought in people based on referrals. We brought in people based on how other people had worked with them in the past. In a couple of instances, it worked, but there were a couple of instances where it didn't work. That was a big lesson for us, because you just don't know sometimes. And so the next time we go around and have a movie, we're hoping to make another movie once the industry kind of sorts itself out, because the industry is very sick right now. Once we do it again, we're probably going to have a casting director do it, because when you've got a casting director who is casting you in a movie, they carry a lot more clout. And if an actor does something that's untoward or unprofessional or whatever, they have to answer to that casting director, and actors don't want that. So if we go through a casting director in the future, we're going to eliminate some of the headaches that we faced with people in the past. So you have anything to add to that?
Well, no matter what, when you have a cast of a speaking cast of 40 people, not to mention 100 extras, it's a lot to maneuver. It was a very large, ambitious project with a lot of locations
and a lot of moving parts. Yes. So, yeah.
You're listening to Art on the Air with our guests today, Larissa Julianis and CJ Julianis, on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. You mentioned about future projects. Tell us about, well, a little bit of what you have in mind. Do you have an idea? Do you have, are you working on a script, or, you know, what's going on there?
The industry is in a very difficult state right now, which prevents us, and I'd say most uppity-ups in Hollywood, of knowing what the clear path is in for the future at this moment. For those of you who have been following the developments in the TV and film industry over the last decade, you'll know that streaming has upended the entire business model. It's very different from when I was growing up. And so many of us remember Blockbuster, and to rent one movie for one night, you'd be paying $5 or whatever you'd be paying.
Or if you'd go to a movie theater, you'd buy one ticket for $10. Well, yeah. What is it now?
It's $5 sometimes for 6 months for your entire family to watch an entire library of movies, or $6.99 for the month, or whatever special is running. So unfortunately, while that allows more people access to more content, the content is oversaturated right now. In so anything that can be streamed or downloaded, it's oversaturated, which means that people don't necessarily want to pay for it because they've gotten used to not paying for it. Right. So it is a very difficult industry, along with music production, along with book writing, as everyone knows right now, to make any kind of living for the actual creators.
So what we're doing is we're pivoting. We're pivoting into areas in the entertainment business that offer us a way forward
sustainably
where we can earn a living, where we can earn a living, make money, and also have our creative muscle stimulated, at least on a semi-ongoing basis. So we've been pivoting toward what's available out there, things like unscripted TV. We've been working on a project that way. And
I've paid my bills doing a lot of live events, because that continues to be very popular for companies, for individual
festivals,
people,
private parties, whatever it is. Yeah. So
organizations. Yeah.
So we've pivoted to doing unscripted television, which we're having a little bit of success with. We're waiting for the big one. But the even with television these days, television producers and executives, they don't want to spend the big money on a TV series. You're not going to see a series like Friends again, where they pay each actor $1 million per episode. They don't want to pay anywhere near that for an entire season. So what's happening is they're looking for content that doesn't cost a lot, that they don't have to pay actual stars to do, and they can put content on for the least possible amount of money. And it's the same thing in the movie business, where independent films, now these days, independent filmmakers are trying to create content for the cheapest amount of money spent. And at a certain point, it becomes painfully obvious that corners are being cut everywhere. And that's not our aesthetic. We don't want to do it that way. We want to make sure that whatever it is that we do, if our name is attached to it, that it's the highest quality possible. And if that means that we have to spend a little bit more money, well, then that's what we want to do. But that's not the reality that we're seeing in television and in film. And that's why we're pivoting a lot to live events, because the money is there, whether it's entertaining children or doing celebrity impersonation or being pirates at a corporate event.
Yes, we do.
Or
we
storytelling
do.
Or singing or whatever, that's what we're going to do.
Yes, we do performance as well as fine art, all sorts of things that have to do with meeting artists of any kind at your events.
Yeah, we took our improv comedy troupe. We did these original murder mysteries. We were contracted by Philips Electronics to fly down to Nassau, Bahamas to do this giant mystery thing at their corporate convention down there. It was awesome, you know, but that's the thing. When you're in the arts, you just don't know what's going to be coming next. And you have to be willing and you have to be able to accommodate all of it. The answer is always yes. We've got the talent, we've got the ability, we've got the track record. So we can do just about anything. And if anybody ever came to us with something that we didn't know, well, guess what? We're gonna do it anyway because we have the ability to do it.
No, the lowest common denominator, they call that in television. And I think that happened because of the two writer strike, the one earlier. And that's when they introduced the first reality TV because it was cheap. And then the second one is kind of fostered that again. It's like, okay, well, we can do stuff that people will watch, Survivor, blah, 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 all these different things that are still running. And you're right, scripted television has been really put down. The second thing I was going to ask is there ever going to be a reprise of Ava in some other new adventure?
Well, I would love that. I did write a sequel. It wasn't up to the standards that I wanted because I always felt it needed to be just as good, if not better, than the original. So I do hope that she does come back around. But I've also learned as a writer that every piece I write, it's from a different lesson I've learned from life or from the journey. And I'm able to hopefully package that and help other people who are going through that journey or who have gone through that journey and that self-discovery, and they can resonate with it. And I don't know what the next chapter is because it's so much of what I personally experience. If she comes back around, that would be, I would personally love that, but it has to be something that we believe is absolutely top notch. Nothing can stand in the way of us bringing it to the world.
Right. Yeah. So the Misadventures of Mistress Maneater, like I said earlier, I just thought it was just a fantastic script. A lot of really great stuff going on in it. So if we're going to devote a year and a half or 2 years of our life to making a movie, plus another 3 or 4 years afterwards, continuously marketing it, it's got to be worth it. It's got to be something that is so shiny and so filled with potential that we're willing to devote that amount of time to make it successful.
So, you know, in thinking about that, you said that a lot of reviews or things are coming through because of this movie. Is it mostly letters or have you had any type of queries or offers? And the other thing I just wanted to mention as an aside. So I imagine, Larissa, you have this beautiful box filled with all these different scripts and writings. Do you ever revisit? And because now that you said that a lot of them are based on what you have gone through, do you ever try to reframe them with everything that you've learned since? Do you update them?
Many of them have been premiered. So I feel like, you know, it's
solid.
It is set the way it was. One of my favorites that we premiered 9 years ago was called Made of Stars. And we premiered it with our theater company in Illinois. And I considered that my best writing to the time. It followed seven souls reincarnated together across 2,500 years in three lifetimes. And whereas individually looked, you know, their stories might have seemed tragic or sad, together taken in its entirety at the 10,000 foot view, it was this beautiful triumph of love conquering all and these people being reunited throughout everything they had endured. And I was very proud of that. And I feel that there is going to be a need for me to go back to that at some point to hopefully bring it to a wider audience. But no, I do go back to some of my old scripts, and it's good for being humbled and reminding myself I wasn't as great as I thought I was. And maybe I need to keep that in mind now too, and keep that ego in check.
You know what? When you're married to somebody as creative as Larissa is, and you know, and I guess I'm kind of
just a little bit.
Sometimes your material comes from just having the conversations that we have. And there was numerous scenarios in our film that came from just our conversations that we've had over the years. And when I read the script, I recognized, oh, so much of what's in the script is things that we've talked about over the years that find their way into the script. So there's always going to be an abundance of material between us because of just the way we interact on an ongoing basis.
Well, in our final minutes, and I know we didn't cover much about Larissa's actual art that she has, but tell us how people can find out all about the movie, contacting you for the various events, all that type of thing.
Our website for our live event and entertainment industry is Binary Star, arts.com, because the name of our company is Binary Star Arts and Entertainment. And that actually comes from Made of Stars. All three pairs of lovers in each of the lifetimes looks up at the stars together. And our characters look at each other.
Binary stars. We revolve around each other.
Yes. One asked the other, what would we be? And said, we would be binary stars because we revolve around each other. And so that's where the name Binary Star Arts and Entertainment comes from. I encourage them to check that out. But on Amazon, take a look at The Misadventures of Mistress Maneater. And it's free to stream on Prime, and they'll have a lot of fun.
And you can find it. We actually have a dedicated Facebook page for The Misadventures of Mistress Maneater. So if anybody wants to go there and find out about our film, and there's biographies of all of our characters and news and things like that for everybody who participated in our film, right on Facebook. So we'd really appreciate it if you watched our film. I think you're going to love it when you do. And if you like it, tell all your friends to watch it. If you hate it, tell all your enemies to watch it.
Well, we appreciate you coming on. Are there Larissa and CJ Julianis sharing their arts journey together, all the creative things they do. Watch The Misadventures of Mistress Maneater. You can find that on Amazon, and you can also find it. We'll have a link on our website. Thank you both of you for coming on Art of the Year and sharing your arts journey.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art of the Year, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker, and for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.